This episode of the Sam Oldham podcast is sponsored by Tern, the only brand dedicated solely to men's gymnastics. Towards the end of my career, I started to work closely with a team at Tern to design custom uniforms that expressed who I was and where I came from, and they were always able to bring my ideas to life. For years, I wore uncomfortable gymnastics clothing until I started to wear Tern, whose uniforms are built with their attention to detail and quality in mind. Go check them out now at tern-gymnastics.com. And enjoy the episode. In 2022, Felix Kuma began a four-year course studying international social science at the University of Tsukuba in Japan. Felix started gymnastics at the age of five and has won multiple individual medals nationally in recent years. He's the first British gymnast to train full-time in Japan and now represents the university team. In 2002, at the Salt Lake City Winter Olympic Games, Felix's mom won an Olympic bronze medal in the skeleton for Team GB. Felix recently competed at the English Championships and plans to compete at the British Championships in a few weeks' time, and this is his story. Felix, it's great to have you on, mate. Is that, was all of that right?
Yeah, it was
yeah,
good.
Was
yeah,
that good? Okay, yeah, you're very welcome, mate. It's an amazing story. I know when initially I messaged you and reached out to you, I can remember you saying you was a bit surprised that I wanted you to come on, but yeah. I just think it's so cool. I think you are the first British gymnast for sure, but definitely one of the first international gymnasts to go over and study in Japan and train full time, which I was telling you just before we went live, like when I was a kid, that would have been the dream. And I said that I'd quit school when I was 14. But if someone had told me that at 20 or 18, 19, you could go to Japan and train full time, but the caveat is that you've got to study, I would have studied so hard to be able to do that. So it's really cool. I'm really happy to have you on, mate. And just tell me, just to start off with then, how was the English Championships? Is that the first time you've competed since coming back home from Japan?
No. Well, I came back this time last year and also competed in the English, but I had I had some ankle issues.
So right, okay.
When I went back, I actually had surgery on both my ankles to remove the issue.
When you went back to Japan?
Yeah, yeah.
So you had surgery in Japan?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. How did that work? Was it done through just privately or was it done through...
No, public hospital. They're really great there. So basically, you have like health insurance and it's not free like the UK because they don't have the NHS. But basically, I just went to the hospital and the doctor who is the ankle doctor in the hospital actually is the doctor for the university gymnastics team. So I just got one of my teammates to message him and he sent me a message saying, I'll come this day and I'll give you a checkup and have a look and see, because I had like, if I was to crush into my ankles, I'd have like major pain because it was like, there was basically, I had like, I can't remember the actual name, but I had like bone extra growth. So every time I landed short, I would like pinch on the bone. So it was like really, really
painful. So it was like bone to bone?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I went and saw him and I had like maybe 12 x-rays on my ankles and chest and everything. They did a full checkup on me to see, I had a blood test, I had everything done.
Did they pick anything else up other than the ankle or?
They noticed some like changes in maybe the enzymes in my stomach, but that was because of gymnastics and like you doing heavy sports, it changes.
Really?
He was like, oh, I'm a bit concerned. So take a few days rest and then come back and you do another blood test. So I took a few days rest, I went back and there was nothing wrong. And he just ruled out that it was because of doing sport, it changes like the enzymes in your stomach.
Wow, I've never heard anything like that. Does it kind of change it? Did he explain that?
He didn't really explain it. He just said that because of high intensity, it increases because I'm assuming you're consuming food quicker, you're getting energy out. So like the enzymes increase in your stomach, but then you have too much maybe.
Okay.
But I can't remember if it was exactly that. It was
So I won't quote you on it. But mate, that's amazing. So you basically had a full body checkup.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you would have never got here, and right? You'd have been waiting for months to see an ankle specialist.
And also in the university, maybe I did it at the same time. The university, every student has to do a health checkup. So they check urine tests, they check chest scan, they check your height, your weight. They do everything to see that you're healthy. And then if you're not healthy, they'll recommend you to go and go see a doctor. So I have, because of gym, and I think I was nervous because I'd never done anything like this. So I was like, oh my God, there's so much like that I have to do. I did a blood pressure test and my blood pressure was high and they were like, oh, you need to take some rest and stuff. But it was because I was like,
nervous.
I was
nervous.
Like, oh my God, there's so much going on.
That's amazing, mate. So how has that injury been in the last year? Has it been a long process trying to get, was the surgery straightforward? Was it quite a straightforward surgery?
Yeah, the surgery was straightforward. Maybe it took like 5 hours, but they did a scan whilst I was asleep afterwards to check that they'd like flattened out the ankle, the bone. And then literally the morning after, they made me walk. Bearing in mind, I had both my ankles done.
They so made you did me both sides?
Yeah, wow. They made me walk the next day. As soon That's as I incredible. Woke up, they're like, oh, we need to get you walking and stuff. But yeah, it was a smooth surgery, so.
Yeah, amazing.
Maybe the rehab was all right, but I could still feel like a bit of pain just because the muscle, the bone was quite tender still, I think, after the operation. So only like maybe 1 or 2 months ago after preparing for the English, my ankles felt like quite strong.
Okay.
Back to normal, and they feel all right now. So,
what does rehab look like in Japan? Like, at that point, you're obviously a university student. Is someone leading that? Are you kind of left to your own devices?
The doctor told me, like, the kind of the type of rehab to do, but he didn't give me specific exercises. But my mum is actually a physiotherapist, so I just got exercises from her to help me. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you kind of got everybody helping you out. That just sounds like the coolest thing ever. Like, you would never get anything like that in the UK, would you? Like, literally, as soon as I retired, I was like, right, here we go. Private healthcare's gone. It's time to go to the NHS. Yeah. To be fair, I do have to say, like, my shoulder recently, I've had my shoulder looked into, and it turns out that I have three full thickness tears in my shoulder. Mm. So I've really messed my shoulder right up. And they've offered me surgery, and they were really helpful. They've kind of said, somehow, you're still operating in normal life without any pain, so we don't really want to go in and do anything. But the way they explained that to me was that, like, my tendon, if my tendon's like that, there's a hole that they could put their finger the whole way through. And I was like, that does not sound good. But so they've been great, but I do know, like, for you, you would have probably waited for a long time, right? You just have to be lucky to get someone that takes an interest in sport when you go into the NHS. But mate, that's incredible. So you came back, you did that competition at the English this year. What is it like coming back, mate, and competing in the UK when you've been away for a year? And do you feel any kind of pressure where people are going, oh, he trains out in Japan, like, he must be amazing now because he trains in Japan, or do you just not feel that?
I don't think anyone really has any expectations. I don't really think that way, so it's kind of all right. But when I come back, adapting equipment is the biggest problem. Mm. The equipment we train on in Japan is Senno, so it's more designed for, like, smaller, lighter people. So, like, if you compare the floors, the, like, floor, the Senno floor is, like, really squishy and soft. So for, like, a heavy person, you have to put a lot of, like, force into it. Whereas, like, Gymnova, you can just, like, it's more, like, springy.
Okay.
And then, like, things like the P-bars, like, the structure of the actual equipment is just completely different. So getting routines done when I first got back was, like, a massive struggle because I just couldn't adapt because, like, I'm not a light gymnast, so I'm quite heavy. So, like, changing between the equipment is, like, it took a while.
What I competed in Japan quite a few times. I really like the Senno equipment.
Yeah, I like it more than Gymnova.
I think the pommel shape is more like an old continental pommel shape.
Yeah, it is.
But it's a bit softer. Yeah. It's got quite a good grip on it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you compete on pommels like a J&F or Spieth and you just slip right off, right? Yeah. So I really like that. The floors are just like a trampoline. But you're right, they are soft. Yeah, I kind of have to wait a little bit. Mm. Whereas, so like a Spieth would be quicker, like quicker reaction.
Punch, like doing punch skills on the floor, especially, like, you hit the floor and if you're not tight and ready for the floor, you will just, like, all your energy will go down into the floor and you just, like, so I was trying to do, like, a full twist punch double front one time and I just did the full twist and I just collapsed onto the floor because my legs gave out because all of the energy from my legs went into the floor rather than, like, the rebound jump.
How'd you find a bar? I can remember the bars used to be so soft. Like,
it's... I'm not great at high bar anyway, but high bar is, like, the biggest issue because the way that the actual bar moves is completely different to Gymnova. Gymnova's, like, in a fixed position and it only really moves up and down and a bit backwards and forwards, whereas the Senno bar is on, like, a ball joint in the socket.
Yeah, it's in, like, a ball and socket,
right? It can move everywhere. So, like, when I'm doing Kachev, I'm always missing it because I can't get the timing right and stuff. Yeah. But on Gymnova, I can just, like, if you, like, use it properly, you get, like, the ping out of the bar and then you can catch it easily.
Is that your first... I know that you've competed internationally. You've obviously competed on different equipment. But is that your first big experience of having to shift from equipment to equipment quickly and then compete, I guess?
Yeah, I'd say it is because, like, Spieth and Gymnova aren't too different.
No.
They're a bit different, but they're not too different. But I find Senno and Gymnova are very, very different because they're designed for different, like, body types and stuff. So, like, the pommel, like, well, you said, it's, like, continental, so it's quite squishy and a bit more rounded, whereas, like, the Gymnova is quite flat.
Yeah.
So when I got back, I had, like, really bad, like, muscle pain in my thumbs because, like, my thumbs aren't used to being, like, pressed backwards.
Pressed backwards,
Whereas, like, on the
Spieth, it kind of,
like,
it, right?
goes round. Yeah. So I had, like, quite, not, they weren't bad, but like I had muscle like tiredness in my thumbs just from like having to like push down rather than like relax over the pommel.
It's interesting what you say, mate. I've never thought about it. It makes so much sense that Senna is built for lighter frames. Mm-hmm. I've never thought about it like that. I would just go over and be like, oh, this is how they make their equipment. So I think maybe get used to it.
You wouldn't really think about it unless you're like a heavy gymnast, because like we have scales in the gym, not because like we test, just because we're interested in like how heavy we are changing weight and stuff. Yeah. And I've seen like a couple of the boys and they're weighing like 50 kilos and I'm weighing like 74. So like I can, and when I watch them on the high bar, the bar like moves a bit, but it doesn't move much. And they get like a good movement out of it when they let go for like a release. But when I do, the bar like moves about so much.
How do you feel about that, mate? Being a bigger gymnast and a taller gymnast and a heavier gymnast? Because there was a period of time where I was, in my head, I was playing around with the idea of, why don't we have weight classes? Because if I'm going up, if you're, say, Christian and you're nearly 80 kilos and you're going up against, say, Ochimura, who in London, if I remember his weight, I feel like it was 48 kilos, might have been 52.
Yeah.
And then I think Marcel Nguyen was something like that as well. I was going, this is like two completely different sports.
Yeah,
like, there's so much load going through his body and his joints, Christian, when he's on floor and vault, in comparison to these guys that are weighing 40, 50 kilos. Surely, you know, biomechanics and their biology means that they're going to be able to do way more reps without wearing out.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that, being a taller gymnast? What is your height, Felix?
I think I'm just about 180, so 5'11".
5'11", that is tall for a gymnast. Yeah, you don't get many gymnasts that are taller than that, right?
Yeah, and there's someone in my university who's like below my shoulder and he's weighing like 45 kilos something, and he's like got massive start value on rings and stuff because he's light and he can hold himself. So it's difficult. I do struggle. But then like I think some pieces like floor and vault, you can kind of like use it to an advantage, especially like on the different types of equipment. But I think being smaller and lighter, you can, when I'm like training, I'm like watching everyone and I'm just like, oh my God, how are they still going? Because like I'm like knackered, because
it takes
so much energy out of my body to have like multiple goes. And then they're getting off and like going straight away. Like as soon as they've gotten off, they're getting back on and going. I'm just like, they're like, I don't know how they're doing it, because it's just because they're so light. They don't use as much energy, so they can go for longer.
Do they still train in a way where they might spend, let's say you're not doing routines, competitions, they might spend 2 hours doing one skill?
Yeah, some of them do. Some of them are on one piece of equipment for like 3 hours at a time.
Oh, wow.
But then that's all they'll do for that session, is they'll do that sometimes, not always, but quite a few times I've seen someone or a couple of people like staying on a skill because they want to like master it like as soon as they can, so then they can get it in their routine. And it looks quite effective the way they do it, because they soon get it in the routine. You bear in mind they've only been learning it for a short amount of time.
Okay.
It's just because they spend so long doing it.
Right. It's interesting because I could never really work out a pattern to how they were training. We'd go on international training camps and they'd have like, they train for 3 days and have 2 days off, and then come back and train for 4 days, and I'd be like, what? I couldn't work out what they were doing. Then they'd spend 2 hours doing Kovac, and then they'd go on to floor and spend 2 hours doing just Ranoflex straight backs. And I'd be like, what's going on? There didn't seem to be a pattern to me. Whereas with the typical kind of, I'd say, British and probably most of Europe training, it's kind of, you come in, you warm up, you do your conditioning, and you go through each apparatus.
Yeah.
And then you probably don't do a stretch or a cool down, you just leave, and then you come back the next day and do the same thing. Have you noticed, is there a methodology that they're all kind of sticking to?
I mean, I don't know about the whole of Japan, but in my university, if we're not doing routines, so we have like a big whiteboard that has like the whole calendar with like different training, like structures, but most of the time it's just free training. That's it.
Right.
So you just come in, you do your whatever you want, you do your own warm up, you do your own stretching, elastics and stuff, and then because there's no like recreational gymnasts in the gym, it's literally just university gymnasts. You have like pretty much the whole gym to yourself.
Right.
There's maybe 15 boys on our team, and then there's like 5 graduate students. So we've got like maybe 20 boys maximum in at a time, and then there's about 8 girls. So the gym's quite empty. So you just go wherever you want, do what you want to do. So they kind of have like free reign at the gym, so you don't have to like specifically stay wherever the program says.
Oh, mate. We'll come back to that, mate, and when you first went over to Japan and what that was like. But I want to kind of go back to the start, and normally I go into how somebody got into gymnastics, but I think for you, it's super interesting for people that are listening. I had no idea until you told me, but your mom is an Olympic medalist.
Yeah.
Just tell me what where did she compete? What did she win? In what sport? And what's that like growing up with a mum that's an Olympic medalist?
So she won a bronze medal at the 2002 Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City doing skeleton bobsleigh. So I wasn't actually born at the time because I was born in 2004. So to me, obviously I have no idea what actually happened other than I've got the medal in my house. So it's kind of like I know it happened, but it's not really like, I mean, it's like obviously a big thing, but because I've just grown up with it, to me, it's kind of like normal now. When I tell people, they're like really shocked and like, oh my God and stuff. But to me, I'm just like, because I'm used to it now because my mum, I live with my mum, so.
Yeah. Can you remember the first age that you've obviously seen her race? Can you remember what age you first watched that race at?
Maybe 6 or 7 was the time I can probably remember.
Right.
But I actually don't know because it was probably a really long time ago. Yeah. So we've got like pictures around the house and stuff. Right, okay. So growing up my whole life, I've like seen the pictures and I've seen the videos, but you can't find the video on YouTube, I think, or there's maybe like one video. So it's actually quite difficult to find. But
and did your mum retire after that Winter Olympic Games?
Yeah, I think so.
So she didn't carry on after that?
No.
So for you, all you've known is that's just my mum?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool, mate, because I'm interested in that because obviously I've just had a son. And so he's going to grow up similar to you, just knowing me as his dad. But obviously I went to the Olympic Games and my fiance Connie makes a big deal about, oh, you should like keep everything that you got from there so you can show him, and like we'll have to show him videos and stuff. So I'm just really interested to know what that dynamic will be like, but it probably would be the same as what you've said, I'd imagine.
I mean, to me, like, obviously it's a big deal, but I've just, because I've grown up with it, it's not really like, I usually forget to die. Like, I just don't tell people because it's kind of just normal to me. So I don't, it's not really like the first thing I'll tell people.
Yeah.
Because also, obviously, it's not about me. Yeah. But like, usually, like, after I've known someone for like, I think there's people in the gym back home who I've trained with for like 5 years. And then I told them like a year ago that my mum was an Olympic medalist and stuff. Because like, I also forget who I've told because obviously, it's not like a major thing, so I don't like just go out and say, oh, my mum's an Olympic medalist.
Yeah, you're not going to turn up and introduce yourself.
I kind of forget who I've told, so most of the time, like, people who I've known for a long time have no idea until they hear from someone else or me, so
We chatted beforehand, mate, and I asked you this question, but I think it's important, obviously, to ask, like, did you ever at any point feel any pressure that, right, I'm in sport, there's a sport where you have the potential to compete in Olympic Games, my mum's been to Olympic Games and won a medal, but you said before we went live that you've never really felt that pressure. Just talk a little bit about that, because I think there certainly are a lot of athletes who've had parents that have been successful that then really struggle, you know, because they carry that weight and that pressure and that everybody asking them like, oh, you're going to be like your dad or you're going to be like your mum. That can be quite heavy, right, to carry that weight.
Yeah, but I think it's not heavy because it was a completely different sport and a completely different Olympics. So, like, I've never watched, other than on the TV, I've never watched skeleton bobsleigh in like real like time, and I've never tried it because obviously the UK, we don't have the sport, you have to go abroad and train there. So I mean, also my mum won the Olympic medal, so it's kind of like we've already got an Olympian in the family, so it's not really like something that's been like a big deal because it's already happened. It's not like my mum's mum was an Olympic medalist, it's not like it runs in the family, it's just like one thing that's happened, so it's kind of like the achievement's been reached, so it's not really, I mean, it's never really been on my mind. Like, obviously, I'm not on the GB squad. I've been on England squad, and now obviously going to Japan, I'm not on it anymore because I'm not home. So, like, I've never had the pressure at a competition to be, like, the top because I've not been on squad. And also, my mum she's supportive and stuff, obviously, but she's not, like, pushing me to get, like, the top because she knows that, like, it's not really a huge goal of mine to go to the Olympics. Obviously, it would be nice to go, but like I've just never really thought of going because I've never been up at the top of the leaderboard in gymnastics before, I guess, maybe.
How did you get into gymnastics in the first place then?
I think my mum just took me to like a recreational session and I think I enjoyed it and then it kind of just continued and then I got better and then it's just all I've ever known since. So I don't actually really know why. She just put me in a class and I enjoyed it. So, I mean, when I was like a few months old, she took me to Huntingdon for like a baby group. So I think she had mind she wanted me to maybe do gymnastics.
Were you living around Huntingdon at the time?
Yeah, I think so. My parents are in the military, so I think we moved around quite a bit when I was younger. When I was 1 year old to 4 years old, we lived in Portugal because my dad was stationed there. So I've moved around quite a lot. Only maybe after I was 4 years old, we kind of like stayed. But when I was little, we moved around quite a bit, I think.
Do you think that influenced, not necessarily your decision, but how easy it was for you to then move out to Japan because you've moved around quite a lot? It didn't seem like so much of a big deal.
No, it was quite a big deal.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. I mean, I was very young, so I don't remember any of it, really. Okay. So, I mean, if I look at pictures, I can remember a bit about Portugal, but I was really young, so I don't really remember much. So, I mean, I've travelled a lot on holidays and also for competitions. So I've been away from parents and stuff, but it was quite a big deal moving away. Yeah, because it's like the living by yourself bit and like having to do everything by yourself I've never done before. That was the more scary part.
Yeah.
And also you're 6,000 miles across the globe, so.
What about when you started, Felix? Did you naturally feel like you had a talent in a certain area? Because you're very good on floor and vault and you've actually had quite a lot of success. Like going through your Instagram and looking at the medals that you've won in recent years on floor and vault at British level.
Yeah.
It's really impressive, mate.
Thanks.
Has that always been there? Is that something that developed over time? Or do you feel like you had a bit of a natural gift on floor and vault?
I mean, so I was at a club called XL before I moved to Portsmouth with Adam. So when I was there, the coaching wasn't the best. So I was kind of like, things like high bar dismount, I was like flying and almost hitting the trampoline because it was really early and stuff like that. Okay. So Ads had like loads of really good like tips and stuff, and he went so on like floor for twisting, like I could do like a full twist I think when I moved to Portsmouth, but it was like a bit all over the place. So he took me to trampoline, we did straight backs and then lots of like straight back late half twists and stuff with support and then by myself. And then he's got this video where I do like a 1.5 and I like bounce off the trampoline and like almost hit the wall and go out the fire exit and stuff. So like at the start, it didn't come naturally, but then after being with him and doing lots on the trampoline, it suddenly clicked. And I think by the age I was like 13, I could do like triple twists and stuff.
Wow.
So I think naturally I could just twist because like I'm tall and quite skinny. It kind of like spinning was quite quick and easy, but double somersaults took a bit more time. But I think when I was younger, I used to do a lot of running. So I had quite a lot of like leg power coming into it. So I think that's also quite beneficial.
So you had like some strong foundations starting with. I remember when I was a kid, I used to play football at a super high level. And it wasn't until after I stopped playing football at the age of 13, like 13, I could just do three floor routines in a session. And I just thought that was normal. And then about a year after I'd stopped playing football, that talent just disappeared.
Yeah, yeah.
And I struggled to get through routines after that. But it was that football, just playing matches every week, that kind of helped me through with that. Do you think, Felix, that you had like the physical gifts that you were born with, but then what you trained with Adam was like that spatial awareness, and when those two came together, that's when you started to really
improve. Think I really had much natural gifts for gymnastics.
In terms of like physically, you know, because you are taller and you're quite strong and powerful. When you tumble, you go quite high, right?
So yeah,
you're quite powerful.
I think my legs were powerful, but my arms were not.
Okay.
So like I was quite skinny and almost scrawny and like quite lanky when I was growing up. So it took a long time to get like the muscle strength in the arms. But I think the running and like the endurance from the running was what helped the floor. I think in my squad when I was training floor, like I could have a go. Like you said, you could do three floor routines. I could go and then I'd walk back and I'd go again because no one else is going. And I think also if you're having loads of goes whilst doing another like endurance sport or something, it's really beneficial for like being able to have a lot of goes and get in the like leg strength and stuff.
Yeah, and the numbers. Being able to do more numbers than other people were doing. What were you like when you were growing up as an athlete? Were you one of the kids that just wanted to work hard? Did you need somebody else to push you? What kind of character were you when you were in that group when you first moved to work with Adam?
Very shy.
Okay.
I was quite I was very, like when I was growing up, I was a very nervous kid. So I think I was a bit afraid. And so I'd need a bit of like pushing from like Ads and stuff to get to doing more skills. I think I was a bit too much of a wimp basically to do some things. But I mean,
Can you remember a point in time in which that maybe changed? Like, was there like a point where you like took that leap and you kind of got over that fear barrier a little bit and that started to change a little bit? Because it's not like, you do get a lot of gymnasts that are like that, right? That are a lot of the time they don't have a trampoline in their gym or they're petrified of going on the trampoline and they struggle with like high bar dismounts, tumbling, dismounts on rings, things like that, anything spatial awareness, big vaults. So do you feel like there was a point in time where you kind of got over that fear barrier and maybe it was just doing the trampoline work?
Yeah, I think generally just growing up and becoming older.
Maturing,
yeah, that helped. But I was doing a lot of trampoline, like you said, like I was always going, I always wanted to go on the trampoline and just like do loads of like triple fronts into the pit and stuff and try and do like bigger skills into the pit. And I think doing lots of trampoline and like throwing yourself in safely, obviously not like dangerously, throwing yourself for like big skills into the pit or doing stuff to like a hard landing like a dolphin half at a young age is actually, you're like my spatial awareness built up a lot. So I think generally my skill level improved from doing a lot of gymnastics and knowing where I am in the air.
Yeah, you can tell. I can tell very quickly with a young gymnast whether they've got a trampoline and a pit in their gym or not. I think it's a huge advantage. And actually, at Notts, one thing that Josh did when his gymnasts were younger, and they still kind of do, although they've not got access to the pits at the moment, is he'd just let them play on trampoline for 20 minutes to warm up. And by the time they were at the age of like 12, 13, they were wild. Like, I'd watch them and be like shaking my head, like, you guys are crazy. I would not be trying that stuff. But then I think it kind of desensitized them to that fear when they get onto the apparatus.
Yeah.
And they're just more likely to just go for it.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And the spatial awareness is huge in gym, right? Like, it's a massive part of it that people probably don't. If you were, like, watching on TV, or you're a member of the public, you probably won't factor in how important that spatial awareness is.
I think if you look at someone who's, like, not so good on floor, you can tell that they haven't really done much trampoline because, like, if they have got some, like, okay skills but not high level like spatial awareness wise, you can tell instantly that they don't do like much trampoline, because doing trampoline and throwing yourself even if it's into the pit and you're landing on your head, you can still work out where you are in the air. So I was doing loads of like half in double back out or something and I'd land on my head, but it would hurt a little bit, but I'd then learn what I'd need to change to like rotate it more, and then eventually I'd get it going and then
safely.
And then so I think doing a lot of trampoline is a big part. I think also ads is quite like fond on building from trampoline. Like I said at the start, I did twisting, and also we're doing like, when I was learning back and full and double double on track, we'd do like lazy back into a double double or back double puck first and then half really late, and then do a late full twist and then full and then a late half and then full. So I think building spatial awareness from trampoline, because it's safe into a pit, is like the best way to work forwards for floor.
100%. I completely agree, mate. Have you ever had any issues with like twisting problems or anything like that? Or have you been fine?
Yeah. One time, I think maybe one time definitely, where I started off my ankles, I did a double double on the floor. I was waiting quite a while to go because there were people like doing stretching on the corner and stuff. I think I was going to do a routine and basically I was waiting a bit too long and I did a double double. I lost myself in the air and I landed basically like flat on my front, but I had my toes under. So that's when I started off my ankles. But then after that, I couldn't do a double double. I ended up doing 2.5 to landing on my back and stuff like that. It took a long time to build up not twisting too much, because I think beforehand I'd been doing triple doubles. So I was trying to twist too much and then I was doing like 2.5 to barely miss my head and land on my back.
Yeah.
So it took a long time to slow down the twist and do full. So I was doing like double back full, but I was twisting way too early for the full twist and stuff. So you need to go like right back to the start and then build from there, I think.
How important is it for the gymnasts listening, Felix, and also the coaches, because you've mentioned it quite a few times, to be able to have the skill of doing a late half twist? Because it's tough, right, to wait before you twist. It's really hard.
I think it all comes down from spatial awareness and knowing where you are, especially from the trampoline. I think I've got this from ads. He's very, like, he wants like a really nice, neat double puck and then a half turn, because if you can do the half turn right at the end, you can build up to like not twisting early, because twisting early is what's more likely to cause injury, because you're not going to get the rotation. So if you're twisting late, you're getting enough rotation and spin to then do the half twist late and then the full. And then when it comes to double double, you have to twist earlier, but it's not straight off the floor.
Yeah. I always frame, that's the way I frame it when I'm working with kids or gymnasts or men. I always say, look, if it was a double-double, I'd say, look, it's a double back with a double twist.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't forget the
that's
double
exactly
back
what
part.
Ads would say, yeah.
I think that's what happens a lot of the time. Yeah. A kid thinks I'm doing a full twist and they just twist off the floor. And I say, whoa, whoa, straight back, full twist, set it up first because that's going to, yeah. So it's really interesting. I remember there was a gymnast that used to train with me, which is, this is perfect example for this. And when he came to the gym, he came a little bit later. Mm-hmm. So he was already maybe 15 or 16. And he has some technical issues with his round off flick. And he would twist off the floor straight away. So before his feet had hit the floor, before the double-double, he was already looking over his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And he moved away, went to a different gym. And a few years later, maybe 5 years later, someone came up to me and said, oh, this gymnast has snapped his Achilles. And I went, don't tell me. It was on round off flick, double-double. And they went, yeah, how do you know that? And it was because I'd watched the technical issues with his takeoff and had guessed that it was that skill. Tell me a little bit what it was like when you moved to that club and you were training with Adam. What was the club culture like and the environment you kind of grew up in, I guess, mate?
When I got to Portsmouth?
Yeah, what was it like?
It was very different because when I was at the club before, I was one of the older ones.
Okay.
Even though we were still young, I was one of the older ones. So when I moved to Adam, there was maybe five or six boys who were like already 15, 16 when I was about 12. So it was very different. Like they were like throwing themselves for like big skills and stuff. So it was like, it was good to be around people who were chucking bigger skills because it's kind of like motivating for yourself. I feel like sometimes when you're like the top of the group, it's difficult to motivate yourself to do better because you're kind of already the like up there. So especially like why it's like great in Japan because I'm like one of the worst in the group because there's so many people scoring like over 80 and stuff. So I'm watching people get up first, go do a Coleman or a Casino. So I'm just there like, Jesus, how the hell do they like get on with it so quickly? And it's just like, it's really good for motivation. So I felt like that when I first got here, even though I was quite scared and shy, it was really good to see people doing more difficult skills because then you think, oh, I want to try that. Yeah. I want to get on with it. It's all about like, I think, especially when you're younger, it's all about like trying new things, just like just having a go and see how it goes. Because sometimes it might just click.
Yeah. And not being scared to fail.
Yeah.
That's
a big
thing, right? Yeah. I remember with me, there were times where I was just embarrassed to fail at ring strength in front of older guys because I'd look stupid.
That's exactly how I felt when I first got to Japan because they're all so good. I was really like scared and embarrassed to like, if I was to do a routine, I was really like nervous to fall off. I'd be like, oh, they're all watching me.
Yeah.
They think I'm really bad and stuff like that. Like, I have kind of like, I mean, you shouldn't think like that, but like, I feel like I'm quite, I think a lot about how people like think about me. So, especially when I got out to Japan, because the problem is when I first got there, I couldn't speak any Japanese. Like, even like, not, I could barely speak anything. So, I couldn't communicate with pretty much all of them. There's like two or three boys who can speak decent English, but other than that, I'd just look and people be looking at me. I'm like, I have no idea what you're thinking, what you want to say to me. I'm just there like, I'm just, it's very like nerve wracking to just having people watching you and not say anything.
Yeah.
So like when doing a routine, I'd know they'd be watching me, but I'd be like, I have no idea what they're thinking about the routine. Are they thinking it's really bad? Are they thinking it's good? Are they thinking, like, what are they thinking?
Are you trying at that point as well? And we'll come back to like the gym and stuff and probably talk about Adam as well. Like, but at that point in Japan, when you're feeling like that, you're trying to get onto the university team. How many gymnasts compete? Can everybody compete? How does that work?
I mean, I think that, not for the Japanese side, the entrance exam for the university is very difficult. For me, it was really, really, really easy. I had to get 3 E's in my A-levels and then I was accepted. So it was really easy for me to get into university. But for Japanese, the entrance, it's a very, very well-known university. It's like top for the, I think it's maybe the top for like sports, for like learning about sports, not actually sports, learning like the sports science. So for the students, it's difficult for them to get in. So there's like 7 spots, I think, for the gym team each year.
Okay.
And there was maybe 6 people on the team when I joined. So I could just join because there was an empty spot.
Right.
But there's not many that get into the team because also there's so many universities.
Yeah.
There's so much choice for people to go to. So like you don't actually get that many at any university. Maybe it's like 3 or 4 or 5 people that join a year because there's just so many options to go to. Mm-hmm. So like because the entrance exam is difficult, a lot of the students don't get in even if they wanted to join the gym team. So yeah.
When you compete over there in Japan, when you do a university competition, how many guys are going up to compete on each apparatus?
So I think it depends on the competition, but also like usually it's about six people okay. go, but not everyone has. It's difficult because there's loads of different level competitions. Right. There's like the All Japan competition where not many people go, and the selection to actually do the competition, you have to send in loads of videos of like perfect routines you've done training, and then maybe you get selected to do the competition. So you can't just like enter, you have to send like loads of videos.
So it's not like a competition in the UK?
No, but it's like the equivalent of the British, but maybe they spent like 3 months when I was there filming like routines constantly to try and get like a perfect routine so that they could send it off to the to the organisation to then get accepted to
so
the competition.
So it's not purely just competition results. You also have
to send
them.
It's,
they have to be like, this is good enough to compete in our competition type thing. Wow, because I remember when I went over there in 2015 and I went to watch their national championships, I was like, I've lost count of how many people are doing casinos. Which in 2015, it still was relatively rare to have an all-arounder doing a casino in a high bar routine. And I was going, I'm 25, 26, 27. And I was like, I think like the first 50 scored over 80 or something. I was like, what?
I think I was talking to one of my friends on the team and we were looking at the results last year. I think there was 41 people who scored over 80 in the all-around, and then there was like lots of people at 79, so close to 80. So it's really high level, and compared to the UK, there's a lot of people doing gymnastics, like maybe 4 or 5 times more people doing gymnastics.
Doing like elite men's gymnastics.
And then there's also people that don't do high level as well. So there's like hundreds and hundreds of people doing gymnastics compared to the UK. It's quite like a not very like
common
when you
sport. Think about it, there's not, if you were to say gymnasts that could do 6 pieces in a competition and maybe score, let's just say score over 10 on each apparatus, maybe 100 in the whole UK. It's not a lot, right? Whereas over there in Japan, I imagine, and we're talking potentially a couple of thousand, maybe
barely any of them specialize. I think almost everyone does all around, and they're just good on a piece, which is why they can get
is
into
that
the final.
Like, is there an option to specialise in Japan? Like, could you have somebody that specialises, or no?
There are some gymnasts, I think, because you have the all-around All-Japan competition, and then you have the event all-around, the event
competition.
Yeah. They're all at separate times. Yeah. So one weekend, it would just be all-around, and then the next weekend, you have to send in videos. Another, like, weekend, or maybe a few months later, I think it is, you have to... It's just individual pieces. So it's like kind of like the finals at the British.
Right,
but
okay.
I don't think it's through qualifying from... all around, it's from the videos you send, and then you get accepted to the event finals.
That seems so strange that like it works that way. Like, it's great, but it's amazing how like they've got that extra level. It just seems, I remember when I was there, I was like, how do we compete with this? Like, it's so professional. I went to the National Training Center, they had like a train track going the whole way around the gym with a camera on it, and they could just remote control move the train track around the gym with
the camera on.
It was unbelievable.
I've never seen anything like
that. The last
day
when I was about to leave, the last session, the guy that was running the National Center said, Sam, come into my office. I want to show you the view. So I walked into his office and you could see Mount Fuji behind it. There was two guys on computers with headphones in, and they were just editing footage of my training from the last 2 weeks. And so what he was actually doing was basically flexing, going, yeah, we've just filmed all of your training for 2 weeks. And I was like, what? This is crazy. Like,
yeah,
it's a different level, you know, for them, like winning the Olympic Games is like it's a massive deal. They go into like the extremes to try and get an advantage over everybody else.
Even in our university, in the gym, there's maybe, I can't remember exactly, but there's about 7 or 8 TVs around the entire gym. They're not all, or maybe 3 or 4 of them are on, but it has like 20-second delay. So as soon as you've got off, you can go back and watch your go. So like when I got back to the UK, especially on vault, I'd always get off and run quickly to go to look at the camera, and I'd even like when I got home I was getting off and like looking over to the wall where the TV would be, but I forget that it's not there because you don't have it in the UK. So I think that's like another way that they're like, so they're always filming stuff, even if it's on the TV or on their phone, they're always taking videos. And like, I see some of my teammates are taking a video of like almost every go, and they're always watching it back, like analysing what they've done and stuff. I think that's another way that they're like much better than everyone else, because they're constantly trying to improve on.
Is that something you've picked up and you're doing more of?
Watching...
Because in the UK, right, gymnasts, especially younger gymnasts, they will only record to put it on Instagram. It won't be for...
Yeah.
There's
no
way they're just analysing. It's not just for so I can go home and really work out. It's because, right, I want to put this on Instagram and see how many likes I can get.
Yeah.
And, do you know what? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no,
Whereas
yeah, it
Whereas they're
does,
purely doing it for... And they do put it on Instagram as well. They do that. But it seems to me the main reason that it's being done in Japan is literally for analysing their performance to improve it.
I was like that when I was in the UK before I left. I wasn't videoing a good go for Instagram. I was videoing a good go, which I'd then post on Instagram. Yeah. I wasn't doing it to then put on Instagram. I was just like hoping like, oh, if I can do a good go, then I can post it. But when I got to Japan and I saw everyone analysing and stuff, I kind of like, I don't film too often, but the thing is we've got the TV, so I'm always so getting off and watching the go. Like, we have a TV by the high bar and then floor vault rings. We don't really have one on pommel, but you can see P-bars in the background of one of the videos. So you've got every piece other than kind of like pommel. You can kind of see in the corner, but it's difficult. But pommel, you can just film and stuff. I'm always watching back my goes and trying to improve, because the coaching style is quite different in my university compared to, I think, the rest of Japan and also in the UK. So our coach is quite... He doesn't actively coach. He observes, and then it's his idea of the way we train is to more get help from your teammates and yourself rather than getting it from the coach. So we're always, if you wanted to get input from the coach, you can go and ask him and you can get him to help. But most of the time, he'll just observe from the side, and it's all about teamwork and trying to improve by yourself.
Are there any times in which he does step in? And
a few times, yeah, but most of the time...
What does he do with all that observation? Is he making any decisions from that, or... Do you get any feedback or anything from that, or...?
I've had feedback a few times, but it's more... He wants you to like... He doesn't want you to go to him. He wants you to go to the teammates, because, like, he wants team improvement. That's kind of how it is in Japan. It's more like... That's why everyone does all around, is because they're more focused on how the team does rather than individually. So the coach is more like, oh, I want you to... Because I've asked him before, I've been like, oh, I haven't really got much input. Is there anything like you can say? And he's like, oh, I want you to be more like involved with your teammates rather than with me. He wants you to like watch yourself, ask like teammates who can do this skill. He's like, oh, how can I improve this and stuff? Right. He wants like... Because also... A lot of the students are taking like teaching courses for sports.
Mm.
So I think it's his, because a lot of them are teaching courses, he wants the students to be helping like other students to practice teaching rather than the coach going in and teaching. He wants you to like help each other, basically.
Yeah, it seems to me as well like nothing over there is done without there being a good reason. Mm-hmm. So he's probably, so that probably makes sense that he's trying to teach the gymnast how to teach, by leaving you to your own devices. Is that difficult? Let's talk about Adam, because there are not a lot of people in gymnastics. I've got to word this in the right way. There's a lot of people that I respect in terms of their technical achievements, but Adam is one of the people that I really respect. What his gymnasts do technically, but also just how they are as like young people, but how he is as a coach. Sport is ruthless, right? And it's like a cutthroat game, but I think he strikes that balance really well, and it seems like that to me on the outside when I watch the videos of you guys training online. It seems like you have a really good culture and environment in the gym. Is it tough going from a gym like that where you're probably getting a lot of input, and now you're training and you're getting no positive affirmation? There's nobody telling you, yeah, Felix, that was great, keep going. Is that quite a big shift? And what's that like when you come back to the UK and you get that again from Adam? What's your relationship with him like as a coach, and how's the environment he's created in your gym? What's that like, I guess?
I mean, compared to when I was in Japan, so when I first moved out to Japan, I think it took me maybe at least half a year to get used to having no coaching, because I was just so shocked, because you see the gymnasts from Japan, you're like, oh my God, they're amazing. They're doing like huge skills. They're winning all around like Uchimura and stuff. And then I went to Japan thinking, oh, I'm going to get like the best coaching in the world and stuff. And then I wasn't really getting any coaching. I was a bit like, okay, it's more like I need to help myself and stuff. So the problem is also because I can't really speak Japanese, it's difficult to get points from people. Like, I can vaguely understand what they're trying to say, but I don't have like encouragement, or I don't have like, you know what I mean, like positive energy coming from the coach. Everything has to come from me. I can't, it's really difficult to, like, sometimes motivation in the gym is really tough. Hard because there's no one to like get you to go. Like, the only way that you keep going in the gym is because everyone else is going. Yeah. And you kind of like, because everyone else is going, you can't really stop and not really do much. You have to keep going until everyone kind of finishes. Yeah. So when I come back to the UK, I get a lot of like, if it's much more like homely, I feel, because like I've got assistance from Adam and stuff, and I've got like friends who I can talk to and stuff. I feel like maybe the amount I do in training, maybe when I come back, is a little bit less, but that's only because when I'm in Japan, I can't talk to anyone anyway, so I just get on with the training. In Japan, I'm usually like the first one to finish because everyone else, just when they kind of like start to cool down, they're like talking and stuff and stretching and on their phones and stuff. So I'm kind of like to myself because like, I'm not like not friends with them, like I'm close to them, but the problem is because I can't talk Japanese and they can't talk English. It's kind of like, I'm like, just like, I'm there.
Is it quite an isolating experience at times when you're over there?
Yeah, when I first got there, it felt like, because nobody was, obviously I couldn't talk to them, but nobody was trying to talk to me as well. So I felt kind of like very alone at first. Like I was like, oh, I don't really want to be here anymore because
Were there times where you thought maybe I've made the wrong decision?
Yeah,
here,
like... there was definitely a period maybe like after a few months where I was like, oh, this is just never going to get anywhere because I can't talk to anyone. I just feel left out. I felt left out for a long time and I felt like nobody really wanted to get to know me and stuff. But last time I went back to Japan, I was like, all right, I'm going to actively try and talk to people more. Even if I can't speak much, like be more, I'm going to try to be more friendly and happy and try and get people to come and like see that I'm not scary or anything. Because I feel like maybe they were quite scared of me because I'm foreign. So I was very just like, I was trying to be more friendly with them and it actually worked out. I got a lot more people like interacting with me, a lot more feedback. And not so much feedback, but like friendliness. There was a lot more friendliness with everyone. And it just, after like coming back, I was just like, I felt so much more like at home there.
Yeah.
And like, I'm really close with like a lot of them and stuff like that. And even there's one gymnast who like, I'd like say well done after a routine and stuff. And he'd just look at me and he'd just like pat my hand or something. And then everyone else, he'd be like, oh yeah. So like he went and won the floor at the Paris World Cup. And after he came back, I think because he like beat Luke Whitehouse, and Luke Whitehouse tried to talk to him to say like well done and stuff, and he was like, oh, I can't really speak English. I think after that he kind of was like, oh, I've got someone in my university who can speak English, so I can interact with. And after I got back, he was like a completely different person.
Really?
I was like, he's really friendly with me and interactive with me and trying to speak English and stuff. So I think it comes from both of us. Both sides, like, I need to be trying to speak more Japanese and be more friendly with them, but then they need to kind of like not see me as someone scary. I'm just a human like them. Yeah. So after that, it was like, I enjoyed training there so much more. But the first like half a year or more, it was difficult, definitely.
What's Adam's approach and the approach in your gym to training? You know, what's that like? Is it, you know, you would go into some gyms and, you know, I remember people saying before, like, they've come to train at Knots. This was in the past. It'd be quite an intimidating environment. Like, it's quite quiet. You maybe have some of the older gymnasts like shouting, swearing, like very much like a pressured environment. You'd come in and feel under pressure. Or maybe you'd walk into Lillishaw sometimes. And I think I never used to think it helped that when they had wooden floors, because the floors are cold. I think it just makes everyone else feel less relaxed. So you'd walk in and feel like on edge.
Yeah.
What's that like in your gym?
I'd say it's almost the opposite.
Opposite.
It's quite, I'm not saying in a bad way, but Ads is a really relaxed coach. So he's kind of like, he just, like, if you say, oh, I want to try this or something, he'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, let's have a go and stuff like that.
Right.
So, and he's not too, like, it's not strict or anything. So it's like, you can have fun and also train at the same time.
Okay.
It's very, like, there's a lot of, like, mixed age group. There's not really many people who are the same age. Everyone's kind of, like, a different age because there's not that many boys in the group. So it's very, like, we're all together, like, enjoying ourselves and stuff. I feel like sometimes we don't work as hard as we could do, but, like, Ads is very... like, he's good at getting people who want to work going. Some people, maybe he needs a bit more, like, some people need a bit more, like...
Is he good at, like, man management? Does he coach you individually, or does he kind of, like, whole group, these are the rules, stick to this. If you veer off this, then it might not be the right place for you. Is he good at, okay, this gymnast needs this from me, this gymnast needs this. This one needs to be held back, this one needs to be pushed forward.
He's really observant with everyone.
Okay.
And he's also quite observant with the girls as well.
Right.
So he's kind of like, he's coaching all the boys because he's like, I think he's head coach of the gym. I'm not quite sure. I'm pretty sure he is. So he's like, focus obviously on the boys, and he's always like supporting the boys. Even the boys that he doesn't coach, he's always like cheering them on and giving them like tips and stuff. But then also sometimes like he'll go to the girls and he'll start supporting them if they need help and stuff like that. So he's very like open to everyone and he's really supportive of everyone in the gym and he wants everyone to be doing the best they can.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a really good environment in our
gym. It's a great way to be as well. Like for you as a gymnast, Felix, that works with a coach like that as well, you know, there are some coaches I think that get into gymnastics, particularly quite young ones, that maybe never really achieved what they wanted to in their career as an athlete. So they're always chasing, right? So their gymnast results is a reflection of them and how well they're doing. And you can see the pressure and they're going, they want a kid on squad, kid at, go to junior Europeans, Olympic medal. Like, that's what I want. It strikes me Adam's maybe not like that.
No, he's, I wouldn't say
and would, but would you say, like, just in general, it's more of a case of if that does happen and I get a kid that's incredibly talented and they go down that path, great. But like, I'm just here because I love coaching gymnastics and I'm trying to give those athletes the best. For me, I always feel like that's probably the best way to go, particularly with your relationships with those gymnasts as well, like on the long term. I think a lot of the time, if you're a young coach or not even a young coach, you know, an experienced coach, and it's literally all about, right, how well has my gymnast done at this competition? If they do bad, then I feel bad like that, then I think that can be quite a dangerous road to go down, and actually you end up probably not enjoying the experience of coaching yourself, you know?
I mean, I think he hasn't, not that I know of, he hasn't really got like a main target. He just wants anyone he coaches, if they do well, he's just really proud and supportive and stuff. And he's also like, he's now the head coach of the England squad, so he wants like, when he goes to competition, he wants just everyone to do really well. He's not focused on anyone. He's not got like a main target. Obviously, he wants to win, but it's not like his main goal. He just wants everyone to have a good time and enjoy and do good gymnastics. And I think it's a great way to be when he's coaching.
How helpful is it, him being a very highly qualified judge? How helpful is that for your gymnastics?
Very helpful, because especially when we do like control competitions, he'll judge and stuff. So the scores you'll get in training will be very accurate to what you get in the competition. So you can realistically see what you're targeting to score. And also, like, even before the English, ads would, like, for the four seniors that did the competition, ads went through, like, routines in his head based off of how we had been training them, and he was taking, like, deductions, and he basically did, like, a target score which he thought we could potentially get and stuff for everyone. So that's also a great way, because you can see what, if you were to go fully clean on a competition and do well, that's, like, the target score, and that's where you could be at. So it's very, like, ensuring to, you know, where you're at the time.
Yeah, sometimes I think you will have seen this yourself. You have those situations where I used to listen to them in the car when personal coaches would ring Sergey and tell them what scores they got in control comps, and I think they've not scored that score. So when you've got a coach that is judging your routines but isn't actually a judge, sometimes because you're bought into the gymnast doing well, you might be like, oh, that routine was a 14.6, and then you turn up to a comp and you get like a 13.8 for the same routine, and you're like, there's a mismatch here. But having a judge, I think because of their profession, they take it quite seriously. They're going to judge you properly, right?
Yeah. And also sometimes because he's a very high level judge, if you ask him to, like, he can be really harsh on you, because then, because he knows what he's taking and he knows what he sees and stuff, and he knows where the deductions are coming from. If you ask him to, like, judge harshly, so that, like, you can then see when you get to the competition, your scores will be higher, because you know exactly where all the deductions are coming from. And you can work in the routine to be more cleaner in those areas, and you can target those areas that need more work rather than just generally doing routines. You can push for the areas that are not so clean to then make the overall routine cleaner.
Okay. And is when you decide what routines you're going to do, I know it's maybe different because you're in Japan now doing most of your training, but when you were there training with Adam, is he designing the routines and structuring the routines, being a judge, or is it, you know, a joint effort? Is it your ideas? Is it just you designing the routines?
I'd say maybe 75% is coming from him. So you tell him the skills. Like, obviously, he knows what you're working and he knows what is good. So if, like, you say, oh, I want to do this skill in the routine, but he obviously will say, oh, but maybe it's not quite ready, so we'll just leave it out for now. Because I think his target, the way ads coaches, is more, he wants just a good, clean competition rather than pushing all these massive skills in the competition, because, like, it's not necessarily going to work. So if you get to a competition and, like, you've been doing the routine and training, but when you get to the competition, it's kind of like the skills, like, oh, it's not really working on the equipment. He'll be like, oh, what do you want to do? Do you want to take out the skill and do the routine without it, or do you want to do it with the skill and try it? So, like, when I went to the English, I had a bit of trouble with my 2.5 and vault.
Right.
Because the Seno vault and the Genova vault moves completely different. So I was, like, blocking completely wrong. I was blocking well for a double twist, but not for a 2.5. And basically before the hour warm-up, he was like, oh, what do you want to do for vault? Do you want to do a double twist or do you want to do a 2.5? And I was like, well, I want to do a 2.5 because it's a higher start value and I could get a higher score. But then he was like, oh, but you can do a double twist just as clean, even cleaner, and get pretty much the same score. So a lot of the feedback from him is really useful. So I ended up doing a double twist and I scored 13.9 because I just did it to like 0.3 hop and stuff. So it was...
How difficult is that as a gymnast when, you know, you've got your mind or maybe your heart set on doing a certain skill in a competition and a coach comes to you and says, look, I don't know whether we should do it. It can be quite difficult, that, right? But it seems like you have a very level-headed head on your shoulders. So rather than, I'm going to take this big risk, like emotional, it seems like you're able to like calm it down just from speaking to you today and, okay, what's the smart decision here?
Yeah, I also think it comes from not really being on the squad.
Right.
You're not trying to like push for massive scores. It's just, I'm just doing it. I'm like, ever since I moved to Japan, I just do gymnastics now because I enjoy it. It's not like I've got no target for anywhere that I want to be. I don't want to like, I'm not targeting a score or anything. I'm just doing the competitions because I enjoy doing gymnastics. So when Ads comes to me and says, oh, you should, maybe it's a good idea to just do this, then I'm just like, yeah, okay, it's probably more sensible. Yeah. Less risk of injury as well if it does go wrong because you're doing an easier skill. Yeah. And also, I feel like sometimes, or a lot of the time, when you do a not-so-difficult routine but you do it really cleanly, you can actually score higher than people that do like a super difficult routine, but because their skills are a bit scruffy or they're, like, because it's new and it's a bit more, it's not, like, strong in the routine, there's a lot of deductions. So you can actually do well on quite basic routines that are clean compared to people that are like pushing skills because they're pushing for scores.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, mate. I watched Moneyball. Have you ever watched Moneyball, the film? It's about baseball. So basically this guy came into the Oakland A's and he worked out mathematically what the best way to win was, basically. And it was completely alien to the world of baseball, but they went on to, I think they equaled the record of biggest winning streak ever that season. And I was thinking, oh, could you do something similar in gymnastics? Because when I was in the gym a couple of weeks ago, I was watching a few of the guys doing some skills. And when I, towards the end of my career competing, I used to like in my head rank skills on the risk factor. So I'd be like, right, a Wu on pommel is a high, high risk skill, but Magyar is like quite low risk. And I'd kind of do that for every single skill. And I'd, if I was doing a routine, I wouldn't really want there to be more than two high-risk skills. And high-risk could be like falling off, splitting your legs, like an execution error. And I was thinking, I wonder if there's a way that you could, if I could just rank every skill in terms of their risk and then design routines around that and see if you were more consistent. I think in America, they go off numbers a lot more now, so they track scores a lot more. Yeah. I think in Japan as well, they pretty much go off top guys at the competitions go to the competitions, right? And they're over like 2 or 3 days, so they have to hit. So the theoretically, based on those numbers, they're guys that can hit the most routines at that point. I don't think we really do that in the UK. It's kind of a bit more like you said, it's more high risk, high reward. So those gymnasts will turn up that are under that pressure, that are on the GB team, and they're like, I know I've got to hit a big routine here if I want to get this spot to try and compete, because there's only a few spots and there's 10 of us going for that one spot.
I mean, if you think about it, when you go to the Olympics, like you have done, you're not doing one all-around competition. If you're in the team final, you're maybe, especially if you're in the team final and individual final, you're maybe doing 3 all-around competitions. So like when we go to the British, we just do one all-around competition and then some finals the next day. And some people like maybe one final, some people 5 or 6. So whereas like, especially America and Japan, they'll do Saturday, they'll do all-around. And then Sunday, they'll do all-around. And then they'll do the finals another time, because at the Olympics, obviously the finals happen a few days later. So you don't need to do them straight away. And I think that's like why their scores are more consistent. It's because they're always training for 2 days worth of all-around. And they know they can do their routines. So I think kind of like the Japanese gymnasts, after what I've seen, is very like, if their skill is not really working, they'll take it out of the routine. They won't take risk. They'll only do the routine if they know they can do it. So like when I was doing a competition, the first competition I did, I was going to do my catch-up in the competition, and then they were like, oh, but it's not really working, you should maybe change it. And they helped me change the routine a bit so I could do it a bit more simpler, but cleaner. So I feel like that's more the way that it should be, because like they're so focused on how well they can do their skills rather than trying to push for like high scores. And because they're doing like, some of them don't do like super difficult routines, but they're still big routines, but they're doing it super cleanly, which is why they're getting like 14s and stuff.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's more how America's doing it as well. They're focusing on trying to get scores rather than
like, yeah, and just I feel like the Americans, when they first like adopted that approach, the routines were a lot more basic.
Mm.
And because they had to hit to go, the gymnasts were encouraged to do less difficult routines. Yeah. But now they've got the now they've trained that way and they are more consistent. Now they're up in the now they've got both.
Yeah.
So now you're getting like gymnasts like Fred and even Yule doing super clean gymnastics, but very big difficulty as well.
Yeah.
But that's like a long process. I think that's maybe something that I feel in the UK. Maybe you'd, I don't know what it's like in Japan, but definitely in the UK, there are just not many opportunities to compete. Mm. Like, how do you get used to competing under pressure if you only compete four times a year? There's no way you can do that. And a bit like what you said, when you go to a major championships, that's why there's levels to the game. So you might make your first major, right, at like 17, 18. But I'm like, yeah, but you've now got to compete three or four times in a week and you've got to do a control comp under pressure every week leading up, three times a week. Can you do that many routines? Can your body take that? That's the levels to it. And I think, yeah, that is why the sport is so hard.
Mm.
And potentially, if there was more of an emphasis in this country of doing more competitions and competing more. And I think you've seen that in that this generation of guys that have done incredibly well in this cycle and the previous cycle. So let's say maybe like Joe, James, even people like Courtney, even Josh Nathan for a period of time, Dom beforehand, all of them went out to Germany and just got used to competing. And they competed in Bundesliga matches where they got paid money, but what happened was they compete 4 weeks in a row, five weeks in a row, and you become desensitized to the nerves of competition. After a while, you go, oh, this is what I do, I compete. And it was similar maybe when Hamish was out competing in America in the college system. You know, when he was out there, he had no choice. And it's about the team. So if you make a mistake, that's on you. You know, he told us that story of him wanting to put, I think, a big skill into his routine. And the coach was like, no, like, this is about the team, not about you and, like, what you want to do. So it's interesting that you make that point, mate. Do they compete a lot in Japan or is it not actually quite as much? It's just more the training they do. They train for those events.
Like preparing for a competition, maybe two or three times a week, they'll be doing it. They'll do a routine on every piece. They'll go around every piece. They'll do a routine. And then once they've done a routine, they'll start doing repairs or stuff that needs work or new skills if the routine's good. But there's a lot more competition opportunities than in the UK. So you've got like the major competitions, which is like the all around Japan, all around competition. And you've got all Japan, like individual apparatus. And then you've also got all around all Japan team competition. And then, to be honest, most gymnasts in Japan are in a university team by senior level unless they've finished university and then they've gone to like central or teams like that which aren't a university team but they're like obviously like the best teams in Japan. And then you've got the all Japan university team competitions as well. But then there's like lots of regional, like, so in Japan, like, I guess in the UK we've got regions like southeast and stuff,
East
like
Midlands,
that.
Yeah.
They've got prefectures, which is like, I guess,
similar to
counties. It's the same as prefectures. So, like Hampshire, where I'm from, would be the same as like. So, I'm from where my university is in Ibaraki Prefecture, but it's in the Kanto region, which is like the south region. So it works that way. So they've got like you've got many competitions that are in like regions, but they're still high level, and then you've got competitions that are in prefectures, and then there's also prefectural, like, there's like an all Japan prefecture competition, I think. So you'll compete for your prefecture. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more competitions in general.
Yeah.
And then there's also a lot of like low level competitions as well.
You know, you were saying that you obviously struggled initially, Felix, not having like a coach when you were over there. Do you feel that your gymnastics has improved since you've been in Japan?
I would say it hasn't improved. It's gotten cleaner. I don't have input from coaches, so learning a new skill is quite difficult. And also because the gym's so, like, people are moving around so quickly, you can't really put a setup. Like, if on P-bars, if you're learning a skill, sometimes you use, like, loads of blocks and stuff to set up around. Well, we don't even have blocks for a start, so learning, like, new skills is quite difficult. And also, because I have no input, I can't like I don't get feedback. So I'm just more for the way I train is more just do what's in my routine and okay. I'll watch it back and I'll try to do it clean. And then once it's clean, then I'll try and start doing, I'll start to learn skills that maybe don't really need much of a setup or much coaching that I can try and learn by myself.
Yeah.
So things like maybe like a quast on high bar, just do loads of like swing hop turns to handstand and stuff and then try and just like push because you don't really need a pad. You don't need anyone to help you. You can kind of just get on with it. So I watch like, watch it back on the TV and then maybe watch like YouTube video to see people actually doing it.
And so that gym setup in your university, is that unique? So normally, typically in a university team or one of the high level teams, would the coaches be more involved?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think our university is a bit different, but okay. it's just the way, I think it's our coaches' coaching style rather than...
Do you feel like when you finish out there in university, if you come back and you carry on doing gymnastics, what do you think are going to be some of the key takeaways and the big advantages that you'll take from that experience you've had, like training in Japan? I know you're only in your second year, but, you know, are there things that you will take back with you that you will carry on in the future?
Doing a lot of routines in preparation for... not. In amount of numbers in one session, more going round, if you can, going round every piece and doing like almost like a controlled competition, doing a routine in every piece because you get used to going round all six. And also in the training, because we've got free rein of the gym, most of the time you'll do every piece in practice, in training. So I feel like obviously it's quite difficult in the UK because we have like recreational classes and stuff, so we can't really get on all of the pieces.
So would you typically, if you were training in the UK, let's say before you went out to Japan, if you had routines on a Tuesday evening, would you typically maybe not do all six apparatus?
No, we'd probably get three. Depends how close the competition is. Mm. So if it's near the start, we'd just do like three pieces and we'd do like lots of half routines, maybe two routines in each piece. As it gets closer to the competition, you're not doing as much in one like time on a piece, so you move around a lot quicker. So when there is free piece, you can get on it. So like in the preparation for the English, we did like a few times we managed to get round all six, but you have to like wait a bit for like floor to free up and stuff. But we did get round, but it's a lot more difficult.
That's one thing that I've noticed, you know, now that I'm working at Knots on a Thursday, and they do typically get round all apparatus, but they are dictated a little bit by the timetable of the gym. That's one massive advantage that guys that are on a GB squad that don't need to study, that maybe don't need to have a job outside of gymnastics, financially they can be supported. One of the big advantages they've got is that I can't even remember doing a routine session where I didn't do six pieces unless I was injured.
Yeah.
It would always be six pieces because I would always have access to the equipment in the gym. Yeah. And that is a huge advantage, being able to train that way, because you're right, like, you're going up to compete on six pieces, so you need to practice doing six in an order, because going up and doing three one night and three the other night is a completely different ball game. So,
and also, like, when you're doing all six, you can see consistently which pieces aren't as good and aren't as strong because you're doing all six a lot.
So you're comparing them to each other.
So like in a competition, like you're doing all six, so doing all six in training, if you're consistently falling on like your P-bar routine, you know that needs more work. And the other pieces, like, they're strong, so they don't need so much work. So you can kind of you can like see which needs more focus.
You can see where you need to focus, the areas you need to focus on.
Because if you're doing like three pieces with two routines, one routine you might fall on, but you don't know how you're doing all six when you're just doing one routine.
Yeah.
So I feel like doing everything, if you can do everything in one session, you can consistently practice a competition style rotation. Okay. And then after you've done the all six, or the next day when you're not doing all six, you can then focus on what you've fallen on.
Yeah.
And then you can be more targeting the areas that need work.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, mate. What would you say from your experience, Felix, are the big differences between the men's British team here and the Japanese team? And not necessarily like the actual team, but just gymnastics, elite men's gymnastics in Japan and Britain. What are the big differences? Just from your experience.
I think the Japanese team has a lot more gymnasts on the team.
So they've got more numbers to choose
more
from.
More numbers to choose from. They've got, I think they have a lot more opportunities for competitions as well. So like on my university team, we've got, there's maybe, I think, three boys who are on the under 21s Japan team. So they've got the top team and then they've got like sub teams.
Right.
And so two of them went to the Paris World Cup. So they got opportunities to go to a major competition, yet they're not on the top team.
Right.
So like people like Hashimoto will go to the Olympics and stuff, but then the people who are on like the young, the like the sub team or like the not so high team, but still be up on the team, they get the they still get opportunities.
Right. Okay.
Like, I don't want to say something that's not like,
it's all right, mate,
but I feel like maybe the British gymnastics focus on too few gymnasts. They don't give other gymnasts opportunities.
Well, I always felt there was a huge advantage when I was younger that they had a B squad, and there were quite a few gymnasts that came from that squad, developed a little bit later, and then ended up on the GB team. So Matt Firth was one of those gymnasts. Theo Seeger was one of those gymnasts. And it was almost like a feeder squad for the top squad, but it gave those guys that were, still had dreams of making it and hopes of making it, that were still putting in the commitment and they were training those hours, they were getting access to the national coaches and the national centre. Yeah. But it also pushed the squad to make sure they were still working hard and not being complacent, because there was a guy there ready to take your spot.
Yeah. See, this obviously changed since you were younger, because I was, obviously I told you before, I was reserve on the GB squad and I never got an opportunity to even go up to Lillieshore. They never invited me. Yeah. Even there was even people on the team at the time who were injured, and I never got an invite. Like, I was top reserve because obviously I won floor and I won vault, and I've also won silver three times in the space of 2 years in under 18. So, like, I know I got better older, but I was still reserved for the team. But they never gave me an opportunity to go up and train with the GB squad. Yeah. Even if someone was injured, the person who was injured just wouldn't go, and I wouldn't get an invite.
Which is a shame.
I'd get no opportunity.
I think when you're in that system for so long, I think it's underestimated the positive impact giving somebody like that an opportunity like that, and what effect that's going to then have on his gym when he goes back to his gym. Because he'll go back to his gym and then tell all the younger kids what it was like, and they'll go, I want to go to the national squad like Felix did. And I think that's underestimated sometimes, and you are probably right in that. And it seems that way, it's going that way now. I might be wrong, but from what I understand, the squads are being trimmed. Mm-hmm. They're getting smaller. Yeah. There's less training camps, which I don't necessarily know that that's the right way to go. I'm sure that there are certain constraints that have been... There's reasons for that I don't know, that would be coming from the top, but it just seems to me like surely we don't have the numbers. So whatever numbers we do have, if you have a gymnast like you that's been to a British Championships, won gold medals on floor and vault, and is clearly a very talented gymnast that works really hard at a good gym with a good coach, you've got to protect that, because we don't have the numbers Japan has. Japan have got 50 guys that could go up and compete at Worlds and qualify for the team final. We don't have that, so you've got to protect them and look after them.
But also, I feel like if you're like reserve, if you get the opportunities to train with different coaches, you get different inputs. Mm. So like, Adam's a good coach, but some things he teaches might not work. Some coaches might have different points that will have a much greater impact on the way you see the skill and the way you do it, and like one little change can make the whole skill change. So like,
it's having access to that knowledge. It's like you said, being around that high level gymnastics, you're just going to improve. I found it really difficult when I was, by the time I got to the age of about 21, it was tough, because there was no one left at Loughborough. They'd all retired. You know, Sam Hunter had retired, Ruslan had retired, Yevgeny had retired, and up until that point, these were the guys that I was trying to beat, compare myself to, get better than. I'd go to training camps with GB, and I'd find the guy that was just above me, and I'd just watch him for the week and go, right, if you're doing 10, I'll do 11. Mm-hmm. And I'd just work out how to beat him, and I'd just outwork them. But it's really hard to do that when you're the best guy in the gym.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, where do I go now?
Yeah.
Then it's like, okay, on YouTube, and I try and find people, but it's difficult. It becomes more challenging. So I think at that young age, giving you the opportunity as a reserve to go there would have been huge, right? It would have been a massive benefit. But also, I think if they're thinking long term, it would have been the positive impact that would have had on all the kids back at your club as well, which sometimes gets missed, I think.
Yeah.
What was your experience like at the English then, mate? You've just competed at the English. How did it go? And what was it like? Are you happy with the performance?
Well, it was the first all-around competition I've done in maybe just over a year because of my ankles and stuff. So there were bits that needed work, but overall I was happy with how it went. I had three fours and an extra swing on P-bars, but like the way they did the podium training and the hour warm-up was like, I've never experienced it before. Podium was like so crowded.
Okay.
And then the hour warm-up, we didn't even get an hour. We got 49 minutes.
Right.
So we were as soon as you finish one piece, like you had to, like, I literally was running between pieces. So I got really tired really quickly in the hour warm up. And then I had to go and do the actual competition. So it was quite a lot. And also because I have bad ankles, I have to do taping. So like I missed the whole floor rotation because I was doing the tape, which I didn't realize, because I would have done it beforehand if I'd known it was going to go so quick. But I had to quickly do the tape. And because I was rushing, I kept messing it up. So I had to like rip off bits.
That's one thing that is, you know, the organizers of the competitions in the UK sometimes, they don't necessarily think about the athletes.
No.
Because they'll be thinking, right, if we start early, we finish early. But if you've not told everyone that, they're going to arrive expecting to start the warm-up at 1 o'clock, but you've decided, right, the competition beforehand's done, let's start early, then we all get to go home early, and they start at 12:45, and that can really throw you off when you've trained for months for something, and you don't really... I guess it's good experience, because anything can happen, right? When you compete at a big competition, you need to be able to pivot and be adaptable, but also it can be an injury risk as well.
And also a big competition, it wouldn't go so quickly. So.
Yeah, it wouldn't be so fast.
And like, I think one reason why the Japanese competitions work better is the girls have a separate floor.
Yeah.
Any competition you go to, the girls will always have, like, the gym will be split in like kind of like a box with like an extra side. So like there'll be the floor and then the floor at the other either corner, and then it'll kind of like work around each other. So there'll be the boys section and there'll be the girls section, and everything, the competition happens separately. Even though it's all happening at the same time, it's happening separately. So the girls, if the girls are finished or like waiting for next rotation, they'll move to next rotation. It won't be everyone moves together, which is the problem with, I find, in the UK, because everyone's doing one floor. You have to work around the girls with music. So like at the English, we were waiting like 25 minutes for the floor rotation to finish, even though everyone else had finished, because you had to go 1-1-1-1. Even though, like, as soon as a girl finished, a boy would start.
It was still, if you've got seven in each group, that's 14 routines.
Yeah, and you got like a minute and a half for the girls, like music and stuff, and like the starting of the music takes a bit of time and stuff. So it took a long time, which is why I think the competitions just work so much better in Japan, because they've got two floors.
They are very efficient, though, aren't they?
Yeah, very efficient.
I'm, like, looking at getting a new car, and I'm trying to get a Japanese car, because I'm like, everyone's saying, like, get a Toyota, because they last forever. So, yeah, no, you are right, mate. It's probably space, and it's probably financing having two floors. Yeah. I'm imagining it's that. But it is an issue, like, waiting around. That changing in and out of floor is a nightmare.
Yeah.
I didn't mind it, because it meant that you spent less time waiting around on the corner of the floor for your routine, because I just need to wait until that girl's ready, then I walk up and the judges will be ready and I can go. But so I like that element of it.
But I also feel, because it happens so quickly, you don't really get time to prepare yourself for the routine, because as soon as the girl's finished, you've got to put your arm up and go, because the judges are waiting for you.
So you kind of have to... And they're things that people watching don't realise, that you're not just only trying to do your routines, you're managing timing. You're watching the judges. Are they going to be ready? Are they not ready? Like, do I need to chalk up again or not chalk up? Like, there's all this stuff that's going off. And again, it's another example why you need to compete a lot more to get used to that. Just to finish off, mate, who were you impressed with at the English? You know, you obviously train out in Japan and you're not over here too much. What gymnasts that are now going to be looking to try and qualify for Paris were you impressed with at the weekend?
I thought Joe did really well.
Yeah.
A really good job, because... Bearing in mind, maybe, what was it, a few weeks ago, he went to the World Cup and it was a bit of like, he was struggling because of injury. I thought the way he competed, he looked strong. He looked really good. And also Harry Hetworth, very surprised. I think it was the 2021 British, I actually beat him on floor. He came second. And then suddenly within like the space of like a year and a half, 2 years, he's like going to World Cups and everything. And I'm just like... I feel like he's definitely got a spot on that team, I think, because he's just so consistent with his routines. He's so strong.
I didn't see the results of his routine. How many apparatus did he compete on?
I think he did four.
Did he do well on all those four? Did he do well on those four?
Yeah. I mean, I don't actually remember how many pieces he did, but I remember he won rings, definitely, I think it was like 14-6 or something.
Okay.
So big score.
Yeah.
Good score. And I was like in the podium, I watched his rings and he's like, it looks strong.
It seems
consistent.
Like he's got a good construction.
Yeah.
Like there's not a lot of deductions built into his routine, are there?
And also, he didn't do floor at the English, I don't think, but obviously the week before he went to the World Cup and he got 49. So it's like, I watched his routine and I was like, oh my God, he's done a double second to last time. And I'm just like, how the hell have you done that?
Yeah.
And he does like 3.5 down the side, and it's just like, really impressive how like consistent and strong he's got.
He's almost like the British version of like a Blazin or Radivilov or just that powerhouse on like floor vault and rings. We've never really had that before, have we? Like,
no.
We've got, to be fair, we've got Courtney, and Courtney's been carrying that flag for a long time, and Courtney's still doing incredibly well. But I think because he's Harry's like Courtney with floor as well, which is like very impressive. Yeah, so he's got all of those pieces where, you know, you've got Courtney, vault and rings, done incredibly well, made major championship finals and won medals on both, but he's now got floor as well, so that's wow. And that next generation is always taking a step up, it's always going one further, which is like awesome to see. But I thought the same thing. You know, there was a lot of people before Christmas who I would have conversations with them and they'd be like, oh, what do you think about this gymnast? Or after I had Joe on the podcast, and they might be like, ah, he's not got enough time, he's not going to be back, he doesn't look ready. And I'd always be like, nah, I know him, I know what you can do in a short space of time.
Yeah.
But it is still impressive that he's gone and competed and done so well.
I mean,
at that
competition. He got a great score at the English as well, bearing in mind, though, like, not too long with the World Cup, it was a bit of like, he looked a bit shaky, but coming and seeing him at the English, he looked strong, and I think he's got things to improve on as well. So I think he can be scoring 85, definitely.
Which is awesome. I think it, you know, that definitely, I mean, winning the English like that, that puts him right in it. That puts him right in it. You know, you still got to go to the British and do well as well, but I think it goes to the British as a good comp, 6 out of 6, maybe even 5 out of 6, top 3.
Yeah.
He's put himself in there. Felix, thank you very much for coming on, mate. It's been a pleasure. Super interested. As soon as I saw you were out training in university in Japan, I just wanted to know what it was all about. I think everyone's going to enjoy this episode. And thank you, mate. All the best for the rest of this year. I know you've got the British in a few weeks.
Yep.
So enjoy that. I hope it goes well. I'm going to keep following you online and kind of watching your journey.
Yeah.
And then pick your brains once I do have plans to start learning Japanese again. So once I do, you can be my friend that I talk to try and practice with.
Yeah, I need it.
Top man. Thank you, mate. Nice one.